Chapter 16. As Hector Ransom was headed north on I-55 toward Chicago, he was passed by a black Ford Interceptor headed southbound. Of course, there were four lanes and a median separating the two vehicles, not that any of the drivers would have known each other or even been looking for each other anyway. At this point, there was no reason. Behind the wheel of the Interceptor was Special Agent Pauline Pepper, who worked out of the Durkin Building in Chicago. Riding shotgun was Special Agent Giovanni Henrici, Gio, who shared the same windowless office with her.
"More than anything else," Pepper was saying to Gio, "I want to move out further west, maybe out near Schaumburg or Arlington Heights, but it takes money."
"You can get a nice four-bedroom in Schaumburg for around $400,000, replied Gio. "We're talking four bedrooms, den, family room, granite in the kitchen, hot tub in the master. I know, 'cause I've looked, too."
"I thought you liked the loft gig downtown. Don't tell me you want out of the city."
Gio frowned.
"Not while I'm single, but I won't always be single. Then I'll want the burbs."
"That's me," Pepper said. "I've got Maria and Adam. I want them in Catholic school, none of that public school crap."
"All it takes is money,"
Gio sighed.
"That's what I'm telling you. That's why I gotta make my next GS grade like yesterday. Then I can finance."
"Well, you're never gonna make it by working some nothing case out of, where was it again?"
"Orbit. If you can believe it, orbit."
She said it as if the word left a bad taste on her tongue. She said it again and scowled.
"Orbit.
What's the connection to spandex?"
He was referring to Operation Spandex, so named because it was rumored the governor wore spandex athletic wear under his suits to hide his bulging waistline. Pepper and Gio were assigned exclusively to spandex. The operation itself was a net that had been cast over the governor's dealings with known mobsters, henchmen, bagmen, and crooks, both petty and white-collar. He used those people, and the FBI knew it. They knew the governor kept close company with them and was constantly chatting them up. The FBI knew this because every phone the governor had ever used or ever would use was tapped, along with his office in Chicago, his office in Springfield, and every room in his house, including his sauna in Chicago, all tapped, thanks to a FISA court order which was general enough that the governor's grade school report card would have come within its purview. The FISA court had agreed to jurisdiction. FISA was a court designed to sniff out foreign terrorist threats, because several of the men the governor kept company with were Sicilian by birth and by citizenship, weren't even U.S. citizens, and he was doing business with them like they were Mr. Smith, the manager down at the Safeway store. The attorney general's phones and calls were likewise tapped and analyzed and parsed and saved to the Chicago DELL servers. The AG had made the happy list because, based on the governor's talks with him, the same keywords of interest were being traded in those conversations. First order of business every day when Pepper and Gio arrived for work was to read over the previous night's phone calls and private conversations. Same thing at the end of each day. They were all summarized, of course, and critical components highlighted in yellow. They were also entered into the FBI computers in whole, because they could be broken apart word by word and sliced and diced and jammed into databases that would have made the NSA blush. Pepper and Gio had complete and exclusive access to the databases thus created and maintained by the FBI out of Chicago, and could even call them up on their iPads. Just log in and bam, search everything the governor or AG ever had to say about this or that topic. In this case, they had searched on Victor and Vic and Harrow and Orbit after Pepper's talk with the county clerk McKenna. They had come away with a ton of hits, bits and quirks of conversations with the governor or his AG had mentioned the key words, which was why they were headed to Orbit. Evidently, the attorney general himself had spoken by phone to some nobody lawyer in Orbit, Franey, and had mentioned Victor Harrow no less than four times. It was just a hunch, but it was Pepper's hunch, and Pepper's hunches always got followed up. That's why she was once again up for promotion, and that's why she was on her way to Orbit. Franey was about to get peppered, as they said around the halls in the Dirksen Building. They entered Franey's office just after 10 a.m. At the same time, Judge Prelate was presiding over Ermeline Ransom's initial appearance across the street in the silver-domed Hickman County Courthouse. They entered Franey's office with badges out and flipped open. Franey was found alone in the office, feet up on desk, drinking cold coffee from his favorite mug, and wondering when, if ever, he was going to master the art of pipe smoking. He nearly choked on the pipe stem when he saw the embossed gold badges glistening across his desk.
Good morning,
he cried, determined to keep the upper hand with the more boisterous voice.
How can I help you?
Pepper spoke. Special Agents Pepper and Henrici, Chicago FBI, you're Fletcher T. Franey?
I am. Please have a seat.
We'll stand. This should only take a few minutes.
How can I help you?
Franey stood to his feet, too, though he couldn't have explained why.
Let me cut to the chase, Attorney Franey, Pepper said in her most commanding voice. 2 weeks ago, you had a conversation with the Attorney General. He asked you to review some records for him. Recall that?
Let me see.
Franey was immediately treading water, attempting to discern from their faces and their body language and their words just how much he could play hide-the-ball with them. Was he under investigation here? The sudden thought frightened him. He felt his bowels loosen and immediately wished he were near a restroom.
I do recall that. We talked, yes.
And you reviewed records for him, yes?
Let me see.
Franey tried again. Then he gave it up. These people were the real thing. Martha Stewart had done 21 months for lying to them, not for the insider trading they were investigating her for. He decided to cash in his chips.
He asked me to review Victor Harrell's records in the courthouse. Yes, that was it.
And did you do that?
I spent 2 days going through courthouse records.
What did you learn?
Everything Vic Harrell owned was mortgaged to the hilt. He owned nothing free and clear of liens.
How did you know what all he owned?
I obtained his... the AG instructed me to obtain his tax return.
The AG instructed you to obtain Vic Harrell's tax return?
Pepper's tone was incredulous, although it was mostly a damn good drama job. She was leading Franey right down the merry path where she knew she could lead him. She had known 2 weeks ago where she could lead him, and she had rehearsed this conversation several times.
Yes, he instructed me.
Were you aware that it would be illegal for you to obtain someone else's tax returns without their permission? I assume you never had Victor Harrell's permission to obtain his tax returns.
I never did. No. Yes, I was aware it was illegal, but I thought since it was the AG telling me to do it that I had a legal duty to comply.
Wait, said Gio. You're telling us you believe the Attorney General of the state of Illinois had the legal authority to direct you to violate federal law?
Yes, he managed through a voice husky with fear. I did think that.
Seriously, where did you go to law school, Mr. Franey?
Creighton.
Is that an ABA law school?
Far as I know.
Was it an ABA law school when you attended?
Far as I know.
At Creighton, did they teach you that state officials had the right to violate federal law and encourage citizens to violate federal law?
Not really. Not exactly.
Not exactly. Tell us which course came close to authorizing state officials to violate federal tax laws.
None.
So you're telling us the AG directed you to violate federal law and that you followed his instructions?
I guess I did.
You guessed you did or you did?
I did. I obtained Victor Harrell's federal tax returns. We wanted to see what he was deprecating so we would know what all he owned.
Who is we?
Me and the Attorney General.
So you and the Attorney General conspired to violate federal law?
Franey suddenly sat down in his high-back lawyer's chair. He slumped forward on his elbows.
Shouldn't I have a lawyer representing me now?
Mr. Franey, said Pepper, you have the right to have a lawyer present during any further interrogation. You are being questioned for your role in a possible violation of federal law. Everything you say can and will be used against you in court. If you can't afford a lawyer, one will be provided for you. Knowing these things, do you wish to continue answering our questions?
I do. Well, I don't. I don't know. Can I cooperate and make a deal?
You can cooperate, if that's what you choose. We're not here to make any deals today. We're here to get the truth and move along. No arrests will be made today.
Bleh,
said Franey weakly. He realized that he sounded like a cartoon character, that he didn't have any strength left to resist. They had him dead to rights. He wondered if lawyers were still in demand in federal penitentiaries. He wondered if he could write appellate briefs for inmates and avoid getting raped. Then the tears came to his eyes. His cheeks were suddenly wet and he reached for his pipe, but only succeeded in knocking it to the floor as his teared-up eyes made everything double. He saw the pipe fall, hit the floor with the bowl down, and a live ember spark up and begin smoldering on the gray industrial carpet. Finally, he had managed to keep it going. He pulled a handful of tissues from his divorce client tissue box. He removed his thick glasses and wiped his eyes, dabbed his cheeks.
What do you want me to do?
Okay, said Pepper. Here's how it works.
She went on to explain how she would dial a secret Chicago number and be connected to the FBI's computers and servers, how she would conference Franny in on his phone and merge the calls, how she would then take him through a series of questions and he would give his answers. The questions would be exactly the same, well, almost exactly the same, she said, as the questions he had already answered. His job was to be forthcoming and truthful in his answers. He was to leave nothing out and to volunteer information he considered pertinent if it were left out or unasked by her. Anything less and he would be looking at obstruction of justice charges, not to mention perjury, falsifying federal documents, conspiracy, and the rest of the laundry list of federal crimes one can commit without even being aware. Especially a small-town lawyer like Franny, who knew about wills, divorces, and deeds in Marlin City laws, but knew zip about federal criminal laws, racketeering, RICO, FISA courts, and all the rest, of which Pepper and Geo were confident masters. In the end, he agreed, and the questioning began all over again, except this time he was plugged in directly to the FBI computers, which recorded every word, extracted keywords, massaged his statements into database artifacts, cross-referenced it all, and made it instantaneously available to all other FBI and NSA and CIA agents worldwide. The entire process took only 1 hour. Then the agents left, and Franny went home, defeated, intending to read about extradition laws in Colombia, South America. He had heard Colombia was friendly to American fugitives. It was the next best thing to cutting a deal at this point.